Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. There's been a lot of talk lately about the $100 million budget gap the Vermont legislature is trying to close. Some lawmakers are calling for increased taxes or revenues. Others look for cuts to existing programs, and many are seeing room for both. But it turns out the state foregoes way more than that each year by not collecting taxes on certain items that it could plausibly tax. Known as tax expenditures, there are about $1 billion that stay in the pockets of individuals and businesses instead of in state accounts. In a special report called The Shadow Budget, VPR has looked into this money. We asked data reporter Hillary Niles to explain some of what she uncovered, starting with the basics. What is a tax expenditure?
Sure. It does sound like kind of an obscure term. But basically, what it is a tax break. It can take various forms, either a tax credit or a deduction, or an exemption from a particular tax, or a lower tax rate that somebody might pay. But what it comes down to is that state policymakers, and this happens in every state, it's definitely not just Vermont. So state policymakers say, okay, here's tax A, but we don't want everyone to have to pay it. Or here's tax B, but we're not going to apply it to every transaction. And generally speaking, these tax breaks are given either as a matter of fairness or perceived fairness or as a way to encourage certain activity. And so the tax breaks add up to money that the state technically does not collect because the policymakers feel like they get more value out of not collecting the tax than they would from collecting it.
And the state gives up about $1 billion annually that it could collect in taxes?
Yeah, it's hard to say. It is about a billion with a B. And just for comparison, that is not too far from Vermont's general fund budget. So it is a sizable amount.
What industries or categories are the biggest beneficiaries of these tax breaks?
Well, manufacturers are definitely the biggest beneficiary, and that's a really broadly defined group in this context. It can be anything from aerotech to cottage industry. But the idea is that the raw materials that manufacturers use to put together into a finished product, those are not taxed because the idea is the product is taxed at the retail level as a finished product. So exempting the purchase of the raw materials and certain equipment that goes into producing the product avoids essentially taxing that end product at multiple stages of its production. So in that regard, manufacturers are definitely the biggest beneficiary. It was valued at about $340 million in fiscal year 2014. The next biggest expenditure, but nowhere near as big, is the so-called income sensitivity adjustment for property taxes.
Mm-hmm. And this is one that would affect individual taxpayers.
Exactly, yeah. So folks below a certain income threshold on their property taxes, instead of paying their property taxes based on the value of their property, they pay into the statewide education fund as a tax rate against their income. That weighs in at about $100 million per year. But one thing to note is that both that manufacturer's equipment and materials exemption and the property tax adjustment for income sensitivity, technically, the state is no longer reporting those as tax expenditures. There are a handful of items that are now, starting with the 2015 report, there are a handful of items that are no longer reported as tax expenditures.
Why not?
Well, there are a few reasons. One is if there's something that is considered an alternative tax structure, they're now considering that, well, it's not really an expenditure, it's an alternative tax structure.
So what are a couple of other categories that they are still reporting?
The earned income tax credit is definitely one. Also one that folks might not be aware of is that there's clothing and footwear. There's a tax break for clothing and footwear, similar to the reasoning behind not taxing, you know, basic groceries and food, is that you need clothing to keep yourself, you know, warm and decent when you're out in public, right? Mm-hmm. And so most clothing and footwear is not taxed. Some other examples, there are property taxes, there are expenditures and exemptions for agricultural inputs, for medical products. You know, one other is municipally owned property. So there's sort of a principle of the government not taxing itself. Mm-hmm. Another one that, as far as the income and individual tax breaks goes, capital gains exclusions.
So, Hillary, I mean, some of the ones that you've mentioned, those ideas that it's just sort of culturally inappropriate to tax people for a basic necessity like food, those seem really rooted in historical or cultural priorities. But are other categories more the work of lobbyists, you know, trying to work to get tax breaks for certain sectors of the population?
I would imagine so. Like you said, some of them are just sort of a matter of cultural values. Some of the tax breaks go back, especially a handful of the property tax breaks, go back to the founding of the state in 1791. Others have been put on the books more recently. There was a property tax break added in 2004 for ski lifts and snowmaking equipment. In 2011, the state instituted a tax break for sales by licensed auctioneers. And there really are so many dozens of these tax breaks that it's kind of fascinating to imagine some of the conversations that went into each and every one.
Hillary, I don't think there are any lawmakers who are actually suggesting that Vermont revoke all of these benefits, you know, all at once, wholesale, revoke them. But just hypothetically, if we did, would the state actually automatically see that $1 billion come right back to it?
That is a great question and a very important question, because the thing to know about this, and when you're looking at the value, is that it definitely is a lot of value, right? Approximately $1 billion. But when the tax breaks are studied, they're studied in isolation, one at a time, based on best available data and educated estimations, sometimes on really hard specific data. But they're studied one at a time. But they don't exist in isolation. They exist in the larger society and in the larger, broader economy. And so if you change any one of them, then you're most likely going to initiate a ripple effect in the broader economy, in the broader society. And it's really hard to say what the impact of that ripple effect could be. And so when we go back to the very idea of these tax expenditures, or the decision by policymakers to institute a tax break for a certain activity because they want to encourage certain commercial activity that they feel like is good for the state and good for the economy. Well, if you were to take away one of those tax breaks, you don't know how that would end up affecting that industry or having the effect of discouraging that activity. And so it could end up being a wash. It could potentially also end up being a net loss to the state. And so it's really important to remember that there's not a direct line between the $1 billion of foregone revenue and any hypothetical amount of money that could be gained from changing or eliminating any of the tax expenditures.
Right, because just thinking of an example here, if I suddenly had to pay taxes on my groceries, I might have less money in my budget to go out to dinner, and so the state's not collecting that rooms and meals tax. So it's not like it's necessarily just an added $1 billion just from collecting those taxes.
Exactly. It's not like the state could have its cake and eat it too.
How hard was it for you to find all of this information, and why do you think it's important? I mean, you mentioned that some of these categories aren't even calculated in the same way anymore. So why do you think we need to know?
Yeah. In terms of why we need to know, one of the reasons, it's very clear that the tax expenditures budget, if you will, doesn't get the same level of scrutiny that the direct spending does. So even though it's at $1 billion, not too far away from the state's general fund budget of direct spending, these tax breaks are on the books and these exist. They don't get reexamined every year. They don't have to come up for reapproval every year. And they don't get as much attention and scrutiny. That said, there has been an effort to pay more attention to them. And so as far as accessing the data, I had the advantage, really, I went to the state's biennial reports that have been issued more or less since 2006, where the Joint Fiscal Office and the Tax Department and others within the state have collaborated to try to put some figures onto these tax expenditures. I will say that that is helpful. These reports exist. However, the way that those reports are issued does not make them very accessible for analysis. You can sort of read the reports and read the numbers, but it did take a fair amount of legwork to take those numbers and put them into a spreadsheet so that you could do the type of analysis that we were undertaking with this shadow budget project. So that the idea being to sort of bring this indirect spending or indirect expenditures, if you will, sort of out of the shadows and help people understand a little bit more clearly why these tax expenditures are state policy, and then evaluate whether or not the state is getting the value that was behind the idea of instituting them in the first place.
That's reporter Hillary Niles, who reported this story, The Shadow Budget, with VPR's Taylor Dobbs. Hillary, thank you very much for explaining it for us.
Thank you, Jane. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
And you can read the story and examine the extensive charts and data that go with it. It's all at vpr.net.